Hello and welcome to the Turtle Tracks podcast. I'm your host, Brian Van Hooker, and I'm here with Matt Cianchetti and Mike Foy from Raw Thrills. How you guys doing today?
How you doing? Great.
So, for those of you who don't know, Raw Thrills recently just released a new arcade Ninja Turtles game, which is being featured in arcades and stuff, and this is really a throwback to the side-scrolling brawlers that we had back when we were kids. So, I wanted to get you guys on and talk a little bit about this new project.
Sure. All right, we'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Cool. So first, tell me a little bit about Raw Thrills.
All right, well, Raw Thrills is was founded in 2001 by Eugene Jarvis and Andrew Eloff. Now, Eugene Jarvis is a very famous game designer. He's done a lot of legendary games that people remember, like Defender, Robotron, NARC, Cruisin' USA, Cruisin' World. He's been around the industry for a long time, and he's always done arcade games. And when Midway Games in Chicago shut their doors for Coin-Op Arcade, a lot of the development studios kind of branched off into other things, independent studios, and a lot of them went on to do console games and things like that. Eugene wanted to keep doing arcade games, so that's how Raw Thrills came to be, and we've been making arcade games since, and keeping that going after filling the void for Midway after Midway left the market.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, we've done a lot of different licensed arcade games and a few unlicensed ones. We do a little of everything. We do driving games, gun games, redemption games. We do some reimagined retro games like Space Invaders Frenzy and World's Largest Pac-Man. You may have seen some of those out and about at different places. Our games are pretty much everywhere, yet we've somehow fly under the radar.
I've seen the World's Largest Pac-Man, and it is enormous.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's about the size of an entire wall.
If you go to any of the places that have arcade games, the majority of the games these days are probably from our studio.
Really?
Or subsidiaries of our...
Yeah, we work with a lot of different companies. Like, we self-publish a lot of titles ourselves. We also have worked with other people in the industry. We have a lot of great companies that we've worked with, like Taito Japan. We've worked with Bandai Namco. We just dabble in a lot of different things, and we have a lot of different... a pretty diverse catalog of games. But Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is our first foray into the beat-em-up category that has been untouched for a long time. And, we wanted to bring that back, to the arcades. And we felt that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is obviously one of the most, well-regarded and well-remembered, both of them, from the Konami games that got put out, Turtles in Time and the original arcade game. So that seemed like a logical place to start for that genre.
Did you guys approach them, or did Nickelodeon approach you?
I believe we actually approached Nickelodeon on that. We had a good relationship with them, and we'd done a previous game with them, like a Nickelodeon racing game that had SpongeBob and stuff in it.
Oh yeah.
It was pretty easy to start up a dialogue again with them to talk about this project, and fortunately we were able to come to a license agreement with them and get started on this.
So when you decided you wanted to do a Turtles game, what was like, I know you mentioned the two arcade games, but what was your major, were those two games your really major inspiration for getting that, for making that happen?
Mike, you want to take this one? Or
go ahead. We can both talk about it. We looked at everything. I mean, there's so much out there to look at. The ones that stuck in my mind from going to the arcades back in the day were the, obviously the Turtle games, the original Turtle game, and the and Turtles in Time. Golden Axe was a big one. And we incorporated some of that in the Turtles, where you build up your turtle meter, which is similar to the magical power in Golden Axe. And with Double Dragon,
we looked at a lot. Like the Turtles games obviously were an inspiration, but we tried to glean information from like as many as we could. Like, we consumed a ton of them, even some of the more obscure ones, like Bad Dudes and the Golden Axe sequel, Revenge of Death Adder. There was all these just a lot of them that I had forgotten about as a youth, you know, and I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that game, you know.
Right. Yeah, we live close to the Galloping Ghost Arcade, which is, I think, probably one of the biggest arcades in the country, or maybe even the world at this point.
For retro.
Yeah, they have like 620 arcade cabinets there now, I think.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, I remember going there and playing like 60 beat-em-ups or something like that.
Nice.
So, I mean, we looked at all of them, and yeah, obviously the ones we couldn't get a hold of, looked at them online. Matt, you used to work at an arcade too, right?
I did. Yes, I used to run an arcade in the 90s, so we had some of these games, you know, on our floor. So, and then, of course, just a lot of wasted money as a youth at the arcade, you know, like the comic book store and arcade combo was always was what I did a lot as a kid. So a lot of these games I remember playing when they were brand new. And, you know, yeah, it's more about like a... You're just doing research, you know, like what did they do well? What did they not do well? That sort of thing. And what can we, you know, is there anything in here we can adapt to, you know, use in our game or improve upon?
Yeah. We didn't try to reinvent the wheel. We went with what worked and tried to do the best version of that.
Yeah, we were trying to make like a, like basically like comfort food to beat 'em up fans, you know, like if you are familiar with the old arcade beat-em-ups, you know, like that, and you play our game, you're gonna feel at home playing it. Like, it's not gonna feel different to you. It's not gonna feel like really foreign and different to you.
See, that's reassuring to me, because I'm like, I'm not, I mean, I love playing retro video games. I'm not into a lot of games, and I love those old beat-em-ups. I actually own Turtles in Time in my basement, but I really appreciate, and I hate to say this, like a low skill game.
Yeah, we're always about making very accessible games, like, because the market for arcade has shifted, you know, a lot of the like arcades are still around, you know, a lot of people like to say arcade is dead. It's not dead, it's just it evolved into something else, and it's like you know, we have to make games that appeal to everybody, you know, not just like the hardcore gamers. We have to make something that like you would like, but we also have to make something that like a dad and his kid, you know, would like to play and be able to play it and have fun with it. Yeah. So that's always on our mind when we're designing our games, is like, you know, we want to put enough depth in there to, you know, for the people that are more sophisticated gamers, but we have to make it so that it's approachable and accessible for the younger audience as well, and like maybe people who aren't, you know, gamers.
Yeah, I mean, like, you think, like, the arcades, I mean, I know there's some, but, like, most of what you see now mainstream is, like, you know, it's combined with a restaurant like Dave & Buster's or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of the arcades have turned into these big multiplexes.
Movie theaters.
Yeah,
movie theaters have arcades.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They're the, you know, mini golf batting cage type places. The resorts, seasonal resorts, always have, like, a big arcade attached to them. We've seen a big boom in our industry recently of the Dave & Buster's type locations. Like, Dave & Buster's themselves is very successful right now. They're expanding. There's a company called Main Event. There's a company called Round One, Lucky Strike. They're like, these places are having a lot of success because they found out people still like playing arcade games, you know? So they sink a lot of money into these giant, you know, entertainment places. They have food, they have, you know, liquor, they have, you know, bowling, and they have hundreds of games. And fortunately for us, a lot of our games are out on their floor.
Very cool.
And as an aside to what Matt was saying about, you know, trying to appeal to a broad audience, we did take the game very seriously, and it does, it can be brutal at times when you're playing it. So it's not, we're not just totally like, the skill involved in playing a game isn't necessarily low skill. Like, you can excel at it.
Yeah, it should be a good balance of both. And we didn't just try to like take Turtles in Time and just do the exact same game. You know, we wanted to innovate and add things. So we have aspects of our game that are different. You know, like you know, we have a turtle power feature in the game where you build up as you're attacking enemies, you build up your turtle power meter, and each of the turtles have their own unique turtle power. And I apologize if I'm bouncing to a different topic here, but
no, not at all. I'm curious, in the course of your research, especially into the two previous Turtle games, what aspects did you find that worked to carry over, and which ones didn't so much?
For the original games, I think it was just like we really liked the pacing of those games. You know, like you're never waiting around for stuff to happen in that game. Like they're always throwing new enemies and new stages, new bosses and things like that. So I think that's one of the aspects we really kind of paid attention to was the pacing of that of those games, because obviously it appealed to a lot of people back then and was very successful. So we wanted to make sure our game, you know, had that exciting pace. Arcade games, you don't have time to you don't have time to just like slowly build something and like show like a 1 minute movie and
right.
then like here's a 1 minute tutorial on how to play the game, and it's like you don't have time for that. You gotta throw them right into the deep end and try to ease them in as much as you can, but you want it to be exciting and hold their attention, because there's a lot of competition on the game room floor, you know, everybody's fighting for eyeballs, you know, and you want to get people engaged and get them continuing and having fun playing Turtles.
So what, like, didn't work? What did you guys find, like, dated from the old games that it was, like, maybe we didn't think of?
I don't know if there's anything we didn't like.
Oh, okay.
I mean, obviously the visuals needed to be updated for, you know, 2018. I mean, there isn't anything, like, horrendous that stands out there. I mean, some of the bosses could be, like, a little brutally hard, you know.
Or
take, you know, quite a bit of money to beat. You know, one of the things I feel that we improve upon from like a structure standpoint of the game is, you know, back then most of the beat 'em ups were strictly linear based. Like you start at the beginning and then you work your way through like, you know, whatever 10 stages until you're done. We set our game up a little more open ended so that there are three main levels to play. And then you can choose whichever one you want when you start the game. So like you don't necessarily have to start in New York City. You know, you can go right to TCRI. You can go to the sewer surfing level if you want to start out. You still have to beat all three to unlock the last level though.
Okay.
So and the levels are pretty long. Like you know, there's two bosses in each level, and there's pretty good amount of gameplay in each one. So that was one thing we wanted to do a little different, because like with Turtles in Time in the original arcade game, you know, you always had to start from the same spot, and then if you died and you came back to the game later, you'd be starting from that same spot again unless someone else was playing.
Now those stages, is it like how many are there like different chapters in each stage? I don't know if I'm saying that correctly.
We made the levels fairly long.
Okay.
Probably 10 minutes to get through each of the levels. And there are three of them, plus the Shredder level, which is like the big boss level.
The Shredder, each level has two bosses. There's a one in the middle and one at the end. Familiar characters, you know, to anyone who's a fan of the show. You know, New York City has Bebop and Rocksteady. The TCRI has Krang Subprime and the 1980s Retro Krang. The sewer level has Chrome Dome and Baxter Stockman. And then as Mike mentioned, the Shredder level, which is the final, like, unlocked stage. Like, that's going to be, like, Shredder's throne room. And you'll have to run through, like, a gauntlet of a lot of enemies you've already beaten in the game.
Mm.
And once you beat those guys again, then Shredder will come down off his throne and you'll fight him for the final battle.
You know, I should say this, that I haven't played the game personally, but I watched a good amount of it online. It's based on the new, the 2012 Nickelodeon cartoon, and it looks incredible, but the moment where I was, like, watching this stuff on YouTube, I saw the classic Krang is the moment when I completely geeked out, and I was so excited that classic Krang is in the game.
Yeah, we were excited to use him too. Like we wanted to have at least one nod to the, to the old arcade games. You know, and what's cool about it is we also have his voice, the same voice actor,
Pat Fraley.
Yeah, we were very lucky that we were able to license the voices from Nickelodeon, we have everybody. We got Seth Green. You know, we have Sean Astin, Gilbert Gottfried. You know, all the voices from the show are in our game for the characters that are in our game.
So did those guys, like Rob Paulson and Greg Sipes and all those guys, did they record for your game?
They recorded for a different Nickelodeon game, and we were able to relicense their voice sessions.
Yeah, oh.
So a lot of the stuff they had there was great quality and worked great with our game as well. So there wasn't a specific dedicated recording session for our game.
Oh, okay. But it still all worked because it seemed like it was...
It's seamless. Like, if I never told you, you probably wouldn't have even known.
No, not at all. Now, and one more note about the classic Krang is I love the fact that you guys used him in the exact same context with the crazy laser eye thing. I love that. So what about your additional collaboration with the cartoon? I mean, so you got to use the original source material from the cartoon?
Correct, yes.
How did that work? Like, did you have to, like, remap it all? I mean, like, you know, in layman's terms.
Yeah, we had to, I mean, the characters in the show were, like, 1.5 million polygons, for instance, and you got to get them down to, like, 20 to 30,000 polygons. So you got to reduce the models and repurpose all the textures. And the textures are set up for rendering on television with all this crazy layering and stuff. So we got to, like, figure out a way to recombine that. So it's down to a set of smaller size textures. And yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of repurposing and reworking all the assets.
I'm curious, something like the New York City.
There's nothing out of the box that we were able to just take and just shove it in the game.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Like for like New York City, like the background looks incredible. So did you have to like flatten it out basically?
No, it's the buildings. I mean,
wow.
I mean, it's they have stuff in there. There's background buildings that were lower resolution that are meant to be put in the background. I mean, the assets we got were pretty much like the entirety of New York City, and we picked the buildings out that we wanted to use.
Oh wow.
And stuff and reset it back up in the engine after we down-resed everything. But yeah, no, if you look at it from above, you'd see those like buildings. It looks like a city, essentially.
Yeah, that's the cool thing about our game is that like it's not just recreated stuff from the show, but it's like actual stuff from the show.
That's very cool. And it looks like I said, I saw it on YouTube and it looks incredible. I'm curious, what for some of the more classic characters that you also throw in there. So I know you guys, I saw in the previews, I saw Metalhead was in there, Ice Cream Kitty. How do those characters fit into the game?
Well, we have like I said, we tried to add on to the gameplay from the classics. So one of those areas was like item pickups and power ups and things. So we have the a helper. We call them the helper power up, where you basically can call in a friend for help. And it's basically like a big like nuke the screen power up. You know, so if you get it and you pick up the Metalhead one, Metalhead will come out and like just lay waste to all the foot bots that are on the screen. We also have a Leatherhead one too. You can call in Leatherhead.
And he does his death roll.
He comes in and rolls through everybody and like a couple of times on the screen. Huh. And it's like a big cinematic like sequence that happens during when you get those things. So when you get it, it feels good. You know, it's like you got something great.
Yeah, Ice Cream Kitty is that was a fun pickup that I wanted to get in there.
Okay.
I remember seeing there was the episode where Mikey brought Ice Cream Kitty into battle with him in the cooler, and he unleashed it on the Rat King at some point, and it was just, I was watching with my daughters, and we were all cheering, and I was laughing, because it was pretty funny at the time, seeing that Mikey snuck the Ice Cream Kitty in there, and I thought that was probably one of my favorite instances on the show, so I figured that would be a good candidate for a pickup.
That was Mike's nod to all the Nickelodeon show, the current Nickelodeon show fans out there. Like,
yeah.
Get that in there.
That may be the biggest cult character on the show, I think, actually.
Oh, yeah.
The Ice Cream Kitty, so. So, yeah, the Ice Cream Kitty's in there.
He's just a regular item pickup, like Mike said, a projectile weapon that you throw.
Yeah.
Like that one isn't the big cinematic, like Metalhead and Leatherhead are.
Yeah, kind of bounces around off the guys.
Yeah. A few other power-ups. So we have shurikens in the game that you can pick up and throw, like shinobi style. For a while, you can pick up smoke bombs. There's a turtle shell pickup that, you know, the turtles will spin around on their back, and you can, like, move them around the screen. Sort of like the spin attack from Turtles in Time.
Oh, yeah.
But what else am I forgetting? There's you can, Double Dragon style, we have, like, objects within the environment that you can pick up.
Yeah, I was going to mention that before. You were asking what we took from the other game.
Yeah, oil drums and, like, boxes and explosives and things like that you can toss at the enemies.
Fire hydrants?
That was one of the things that I liked in the older Turtle games. That there really wasn't, in my opinion, enough of the interaction with environment items.
Yeah.
So we tried to add a good variety of those throughout the level, whether they're exploding items or just crates and barrels and garbage cans. And the cool thing about those is you can accidentally hit your friends with those.
Yep. And you can also, there's like objects within the environment that'll break too. Like, you know, you can hit the fire hydrant, you can hit the parking meter, you can hit the, you know, sewer pipe, you know, things like that. That will, not everything is interactive, but a lot is.
The fire hydrant's always the classic favorite one.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. I'm curious, is Splinter in the game anywhere?
He is not.
Okay.
No. We chose to focus on the four turtles for the game.
In those old games, they could never figure out how to fit him in, so it was just like, if you were sitting there waiting, he would come on screen and, yeah, like, that's it. That's all you had for him.
Yeah.
So, you know, talking about the Nickelodeon 2012 series, I'm sure you guys know that the show is since ended and the new cartoon is starting up soon.
Correct.
I was curious, was there any, like, did you guys know that when you were starting the game? Is there any sort of concern about that? I mean, I think it has staying power, but I'm just curious.
No, we didn't know anything about
that. When we started. I don't think we're that concerned. I mean, the 2012 show was well-liked. It was on for a lot of years. The merchandise is still out there. You know, and Turtles is an enduring brand, you know, like it's, I think like when people at the arcade come and approach our new game, there's going to be a certain segment of people that are fans of the 2012 show, but then there's going to be a lot of people that maybe only remember the 80s show or they only remember the movies or something and are still going to have a good time playing the game because of the theme and the license is familiar enough to people of all ages, I think, where I don't think that's going to be too big of an issue. I still think it's a very, very strong license.
And with that classic gameplay, I feel like it's really universal for, especially for those nostalgic fans.
Right.
So I'm curious, do the four turtles play differently from one another?
Yes, there are differences. Obviously they each have their own weapons. Their unique weapons, but they also have unique turtle powers. Like each one will, like when you build up your turtle power meter, there's a you have your standard jump and attack buttons, but there's also a large turtle power button that will glow green when your turtle power meter is full, and you press that, and it's basically like another nuke the screen like power up that each turtle does. They'll unleash like something huge, like Raphael will like pound the ground and make like an earthquake, and you know Leonardo will spin around with his swords and make like a big energy tornado and kill all the enemies. And what's cool about those turtle power attacks is you can even use them on bosses. You know, they work on anyone in the game.
They won't kill the boss, will they?
They can.
Oh wow!
I mean, not instantly.
Okay.
It can only damage the boss, but like your standard enemies, like your foot bots and mousers and things like that, those will all die from the turtle power attack. So I would say like the turtle power is probably the main difference. They all share like some of, you know, unique. The standard moves, you know, everybody's got their jump kick and their running attack and things like that that they share. But the turtle powers are the big difference.
I've always been a Donnie guy, but in the games I often enjoyed playing Michelangelo the most.
Yeah, Mikey's a fun character. And his turtle power is probably the silliest but most fun of the four. Like he flips up a bunch of pizzas into the air and like chops them up with his nunchucks and uses the pizza slices as projectiles against the enemies.
Oh, nice.
That's his big turtle power move.
What's Donnie's?
Donnie lifts his staff up and shoots a lightning out of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Lightning shoots everybody.
Yeah, it just fries everybody on the screen.
Very cool. So I think that mostly wraps things up. I'm curious, what are, from each of you guys, what's your favorite Turtles?
For me, it's Leonardo. I've always been a big Leo fan. Like, the swords always, like, interested me when I was a kid, and he was the one I gravitated to.
Yeah, and myself, I used to be more of a Donatello fan, but I guess I like Raphael the best these days.
Oh, okay, cool.
Old and angry or something.
And my last thing I wanted to know is there a way for fans, and I'm thinking really of myself here, that we can know where your games, specifically this one, is located?
Well, the game is not out yet.
We're actually
at the tail end of development on it. We're going to be wrapping it up pretty soon, and the game is supposed to start shipping in the spring of this year.
Yeah, there are some test sites, but...
Yeah, it's testing, you know, a few locations, but the wide release will be, like, spring of this year. And, like, you can play our games at pretty much anywhere that has arcade games. You'll find Rothrill's games. Like, I mentioned Dave & Buster's, Main Event, you know, Round One, Chuck E. Cheese. They buy a lot of our games. There's a lot of great independent places out there, Lucky Strike. I could keep on naming. But if you go to any of your, like, local, like, entertainment centers that have lots of arcade games and stuff, it's probably a good bet that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles will start showing up at a lot of these places. And if they don't have them, start asking them.
All right, that's exactly what I wanted to hear.
Because they do respond to that sort of thing. If really? They get, like, a lot of their customers asking, when are you guys getting, you know, this game, then they start looking into bringing it in quicker.
Oh, that's good to know. All right, so I'll start pestering my local places come spring.
Please do.
All right, guys, like, that really covers things. I just wanted to both thank you both for spending time with us here. And thank you to Turtle Flakes, who we're doing this podcast in conjunction with. And all right, guys, thanks so much.
All right, no problem.
Take care. Shock, beat the king. Can't stop these radical dudes. The secret of the ooze and the chosen few. Emerge from the shadows to make this.